to spark lively discussion about a variety of everyday topics from the viewpoints of spirituality and metaphysics. This is New Perspectives.
Good evening. I'm Rory Pinto, your host for New Perspectives this evening, and with me is my co-host, who's also my special guest, Anton Blumen.
Hello.
And tonight we're going to be talking about finding true security, how to use neurofeedback and energy healing to regain balance, find clear purpose, and act effectively. So Anton is not only my colleague, but he's also a holistic healthcare practitioner in his own right. And we're going to actually talk about the work that he does this evening and how it can help us to find true security. Anton, how did you come up with this program tonight? We did a lot of reflection about what your practice was about. What's your view of things?
Well, actually, in arriving at this title of the show, it really was, in essence, distilling what I aim to achieve when I'm in my practice. It's sort of my mission, in a way. In other words, I'm not just a clinician. I'm also wearing other hats. I'm a guide. I'm a facilitator. There's some education involved in terms of holistic health and wellness. And above all, it's a process. It's not just ABC and you're done. So, and it corresponds to how we can approach life. Life as a process. It's not a fixed thing.
A lot of times symptoms get your attention. You know, a toothache is a great example of something that really gets your attention. You know, or heartbreak on an emotional level, or you know, it's difficulty focusing, or in the case of a stroke, you know, losing half your body and having to recreate new pathways. So symptoms get your attention and they get people to your door, and then what?
Well, let me just backtrack for a moment. When we talk about symptoms, yes, I use neurofeedback to alleviate neurological conditions like migraines and sleep problems, anxiety, depression, all that kind of thing. And that's, you could say that's all about distress. People in distress, very prevalent. So what I'm saying as a sort of an overview is that we're living in sort of stressful times of upheaval, turbulent times, a lot of agitation, which of course affects everybody. We're affected by what's happening in the world. We're affected by our daily living. And so we react. We react and we have difficulties from that. It's very debilitating to be bombarded by pollution of all kinds, the media, electronic pollution, environmental pollution, and just simply too much noise. So one way I could describe my work is to say I like to help reduce noise in your nervous system with the techniques that I'm using. And at the same time, we all get stuck, so I also like to clear energy, clear the energetic flow, let it flow, let it be balanced.
What strikes me is that we are talking about imbalance, when there's too much of something or not enough of something, either way, whether it's energy or speech or activity. That's what produces the distress and the disarray in a way. So we are really talking about this dynamic balance, much like riding a bicycle. It's not static, and that's kind of the art of it.
Yeah, that's a metaphor I use in my practice. I'm helping people ride a bike for the first time with training wheels. And as the training progresses and the brain, let's say, assimilates the training through the software, you throw away the training wheels, which of course, as opposed to so many people are on medications. And the example is, for example, a lot of kids are put on Ritalin or something equivalent for ADHD. And as long as they're on the meds, in some cases, things go better. But as soon as they come off the meds, and you do have to come off meds because of all the long-term side effects and consequences, you're back to square one.
Mm-hmm. My whole philosophy. Like it never happened.
Well, sadly, you know, this is the result of a synthetic invasion, so to speak.
I think of something like bipolar disease, and, you know, some people, at least in conventional circles, would say, okay, you have to be on medication for your whole life. And I don't necessarily debate that. I don't have an opinion about it. I think it's on a individual basis, but how would your work help a non-medicine approach to that imbalance?
I have to preface this as a healthcare professional by saying that I'm not a doctor.
Right.
I don't ever tell people to come off meds.
Right.
In fact, I welcome them to refer me to their doctor. I'd be glad to have a conversation about what I do, an alternative approach, with the goal, the long-term goal of weaning the patient off the meds, mm-hmm. tapering, is it?
Or tapering, or lessening, certainly, if it's not possible.
So,
and I'm not anti-medicine myself, but, you know, there's a place for it.
Of course. So. You know, someone who's had a substantial seizure history, they usually have to stay on anti-seizure meds.
Mm-hmm.
That's just common sense.
Mm-hmm.
But in many other cases, it's found through many studies and decades of research with neurofeedback that maybe there are alternatives. So that's where I come in.
So maybe we could talk about neurofeedback. I think, you know, many people have heard of the word or biofeedback but don't really know what it is or what it does or how it works. So I'd like to explore that because, you know, even I, up to 20 minutes ago, didn't know as much as I know now in preparing for the show. So what is neurofeedback and how does it work?
Okay, so let me start by saying what the feedback is in neurofeedback.
Ah, good.
So anything that's called biofeedback is a measure of your physiology, and you can just take your pulse and go, huh, it's racing. Maybe I should slow down a bit, gather myself. Mm-hmm. Well, that's information fed back to you about your body, right? So the nurse sticks a thermometer in your mouth and takes your temperature. Oh, you got a fever.
Mm-hmm.
That's information, that's feedback. I have a modality called heart math, which is a simple technology with a finger sensor which measures heart rate variability and helps harmonize the heart rhythms and the brain rhythms. And I can have someone look at the screen and watch their own heart rhythms and see if they are so-called coherent waves or all-over-the-place waves, which is informing the patient, oh, I'm a little stressed, or I'm not really in sync, and if I breathe, if I learn to progressively relax, maybe that can change, and I'm really practicing self-regulation. A more sophisticated form of feedback is neurofeedback, or EEG,
mm-hmm.
biofeedback with brain waves, where I use software which it creates a loop between, let's say I'm hooking you up with the sensor, and it takes your impulses, your signals, through the hardware, which analyzes, into the software, which displays magnified versions of your brain waves, which makes sense to me. It also provides ideal conditions for the signals fed back to your brain, where your brain can actually use that information to subtly reorganize so that it's more regulated. And it's done through in the lens, which is the software I use, stands for Low Energy Neurofeedback System. uses a very tiny signal that's like, they say it's 400th the intensity of your cell phone. So it's very non-invasive. It's a drug-free alternative, and it's very gentle. But it's enough, the brain is attracted to that signal. It's so different from ambient noise. So the brain is attracted to the signal about itself.
Hmm.
So it uses that information to very subtly reconfigure.
Is that like a picture of a dog being attracted to another dog, but, you know, ignoring a camel or something like that?
That's pretty imaginative, Rory. I don't know where to go with that one.
Well, you know how dogs get excited when they're around each other. Children will ignore adults, but they'll be excited around other children and want to companion with them and play and you know, be with each other. So like my brain wave, when it feels its mirror,
well, yes, mirror
gets
is a
excited
good thing.
Like two dogs meeting, you know?
There is something about the mirror aspect because, and this is related to the other work I do with energy, our brains, our bodies have an electrical field, electromagnetic field. In fact, it's around everything. It's also around the equipment that is used in neurofeedback. There's a kind of a resonance that is built up, and with a slight offset of one to the other, it can very subtly interfere, as it were, with your rhythms, so that if you're stuck in a holding pattern, let's say you experience some trauma, it very gently nudges you out of that holding pattern and frees you up to find your true balance, if you will. So I just want to make this very important point, which is the whole crux of it is about self-regulation and regulation of the autonomic nervous system. We've heard of fight or flight.
Mm-hmm.
All systems go, all our physiology is in play. But when that threat is over or that demand is over, we need to relax. A lot of people don't know how to switch off. There's that dysregulation of that internal thermostat, if you will. So a lot of this is about coming into balance.
That actually is the missing link. Most people are just hooked into fight or flight but have not even aware of that relax mode or that rest mode as another option,
mm-hmm.
which is so restorative.
Yeah. By the way, I'd like to tell you a little story, if I will, about
please.
How I came to discover neurofeedback. I was working in hospitals and rehab centers as a counselor and speech pathologist, and I was working with head injured and stroke patients, neurologically impaired. I became very fascinated with neuroscience in general. And then I met someone who was practicing EEG therapy. And not only was this fascinating, here was a core study which went to the heart of your physiology, the brain. Not to knock the verbal value of counseling, but this went to the heart of the matter, in my opinion. This was another approach that I was very excited about. And by coincidence, the place where I found this guy who was doing the therapy, there was a magnetic field on his land, and I really experienced it. We all hear about power centers, like in Sedona. So this was like a mini power center, if you will. And then sometime later, when I encountered reconnective healing, it was very reminiscent, that feeling of magnetism and vibration. And so it kind of, this was like a precursor to bringing these therapies into my practice.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you talk about my practice, it's a combination of feedback and energy work, energy balancing, mm-hmm. working with meridians and the electromagnetic field. Mm-hmm. So I like to have that spectrum of approach.
So do you want to talk a little bit about how the work with this technology integrates with something, this more subtle work that you do, the reconnective healing? I guess you probably could just begin to describe reconnective healing, then we'll talk about how these various tools that you have or modalities kind of work together
mm-hmm.
when you might be inclined to draw upon.
So as far as the energy work,
or when?
I started with Reiki, and then I found reconnective healing. And I was very drawn to the reconnective healing. It had that real sensation that I resonated with, overused word, but it really did feel like a resonance. And so it was a natural to incorporate into my practice because it's very, very deeply relaxing. It works on a cellular level. And there's two aspects. One is the reconnective healing, so-called, which is an intuitive form. You really do sense someone's electrical field around over their body. You don't even need to touch the body. And at the same time, there's something called the reconnection, which is more specific and based on meridians or grid lines, which in turn are connected with the larger grid of the earth and beyond. So it comes into this interconnectedness idea. So the more you become sensitized to this kind of work on a personal level as well, you really do start to feel all these interconnections. I had a client who I did a healing with who related afterwards that she had these visions and she had wonderful sense of serenity.
Mm-hmm.
And with the neurofeedback, the lens, she also had this nice benefit of clearer thinking. So I had these two modalities working synergistically,
mm-hmm.
which I like to do. I like to work sometimes more than one modality.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just an example. Someone else, I also did the combination of the lens and EFT, which I haven't yet mentioned, emotional freedom technique, which is tapping on meridians. Very widely used modality. And I remember this young man was very sort of agitated and lacking self-esteem, didn't know how to face life's challenges. And somehow with this training, he felt a lot more secure, which is what this show is about. He felt more grounded and able to face these challenges, more resilient. And at the same time, he had this phrase I remember called, "I don't have to sweat the small stuff."
Right.
So, you know, again, anyone who's had any inquiry into their own existence will know that we belong to something greater. And really, that's so fundamental. It's fundamental to that feeling of inner resources, that you feel you're not alone. It's not you against the world. You don't have to be thrown by the wind. You really can have an anchor.
Right. That really is at the core of the word to heal, which is to be whole again, to be whole. You know, and it's something that we grow into, and that you, as a facilitator, help people to clear away the obstacles to living fully, to, you know, open themselves to and be able to flow with experiences rather than the usual fright and then flight or fight response when you're off balance and struggling to keep your head above water.
And we all get thrown. It happens.
That's right.
But the whole trick is, how quickly can I come back to equilibrium?
Right.
So the idea of self-regulation, again, which is so fundamental to my way of looking at it, is we all get thrown. It's life. But if we can gently come back in a timely manner, then we feel that sense of inner security. We feel that regulation. It's in our physiology.
Mm-hmm.
And what I do is I try to assist using my tools to assist in this regulation of that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's so core. And another core phrase that I've evolved is I try to work with people to become less reactive and more sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
So what I mean by reactive, people are in distress, they're in disarray, everybody gets influenced by all these negative things around them, not right. to mention there might be medical difficulties, genetic difficulties. People could be unwell, but they could also just be very agitated by everything and fragmented. They're in pieces. So how to come into a more collected state with the help of these therapies, and basically to from this more integrated place to become more aware, more flexible, more adaptable. Adaptability is huge. Can I adapt to changing circumstances? Because things are always changing. We may have a fixed idea of how we would like things to be, but it ain't there. It ain't true. So
not yet.
Not yet. One fine day when there are no more wars. Yes, yeah, so adaptability is big. It implies all kinds of awareness of your state, awareness of how I relate to other people, how they relate to me, what effect do my manifestations have on the world around me, mm-hmm. what do I bring in my daily life as mm-hmm. I walk out the my house or what have you. And so there's this sensitivity, which is really information again, mm-hmm. about what's going on inside and outside.
Right.
And also that can translate into, let's say someone came in with an addictive problem, they've been on a lot of drugs, they've self-medicated because they're so agitated, as is often the case. Well, they might find that halfway through the training, they really become, I don't want to take this anymore, these drugs.
Right.
The body is throwing them out. It's become more sensitive, more healthy. It doesn't want these artificial aids. So part of that equation of sensitivity is to see that there are healthy lifestyle choices. And I like to help with that part too. Not that I'm perfect myself, but just simply, we all do have a choice if we knew there was one to have.
Yeah, and there's no choice unless this self-awareness kicks in, because otherwise you're at the mercy of your habitual way of doing things and your addiction to drama. You see that with people who are always in a state of crisis and would be lost without it, in a way, because it's you get so pumped up that you thrive on almost set your world up so that it can be management by crisis, but it, you know, it prohibits long-term planning and an accurate assessment of the situation to boot.
I just want to comment on that, this psychodrama that's so prevalent in families, for example. I could say that some of that has to do with this idea we need noise all the time, distraction, because we don't know how to be quiet, or we're afraid of the quiet. Right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot to be said about clearing the noise, the clutter, and seeing what's there, because that's how discoveries are made. And that to me is such a satisfying part of the healing process, is helping someone find that space to enrich their lives, to make a paradigm shift sometimes. For example, I had a patient who came to me very distressed. She had migraines, she had rages with her husband.
Mm-hmm.
She said, I'm out of control, I don't know what to do. She had brain fog, and she was a real success story. It was something like 6 sessions of neurofeedback.
Mm-hmm.
She was all calmed down. She seemed to be very well regulated, and then she disappeared for a few weeks. I thought, what happened to her? And she comes back with a big smile on her face and shows me these beautiful mandala paintings.
Wow.
She said, I'm really at peace. I've discovered my art again. And by the way, that reminds me of another aspect of the neurofeedback, which is peak performance training. In other words, it's not just for clinical symptoms. So I had a patient who was a musician who said, "I've got ADD. I'm very agitated. I can't sleep well. I'm feeling a sort of a lack of confidence in my music." And after a course of treatment with a few modalities, including the lens, he really said, "I've discovered an interest in meditating.
Mm-hmm.
I've found a new flow in my music. I'm really having a great time now." And that was really because I believe his energy was cleared. There was more clarity in his energy. And so the mind, the body, the feelings, they all, when they're more in sync, good things happen. And it's reflected in our lives, hopefully.
Hmm.
Could be, by the way, peak performance. You know, I've worked with young corporate guys who want to increase their productivity. I've worked with, you know, different performers. So whatever it is, this idea of peak performance is not, you know, necessarily running at 50 miles an hour, being a superhero. It really has more to do with, in my experience, to do with being in place, finding a quiet place where the emotions don't interfere with a very clear thought, or a clear purpose, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
From there, you can take right action. You know what to do in a given moment.
Right.
And that's so key. I'm sure you agree with me there.
Right time, right place, right amount of energy. It all comes from being tuned into the situation. If you're agitated, that way of reading a situation suffers, and you see. If you're agitated, you're going to see agitation and react accordingly in a very habitual way, at least in my experience.
And not to mind that we do have habits, but do I have to be a slave to them? So, you know, I'm just thinking of another patient who came to me who was very anxious that he was losing it, quote unquote.
Mm.
He felt like he was cognitively in decline, and he got very anxious about it because he had been a very active person in his career. And my perception of how things were with him was that he wasn't that much decline cognitively. He was older, but the anxiety was misplaced in the sense that he was kind of overwhelmed with it.
Mm-hmm.
But with the training with the lens, neurofeedback, he made a very important observation, which I didn't tell him. He just offered it. He said, "You know, the other day I really caught my reactions. And, I blow my top a lot. I get angry, just like my father."
Huh.
And he said, "I caught it in the moment. And because of that, it sort of worked that I wasn't taken by the reaction so much." And I said, "That's fantastic." And with more training, he indeed became less reactive, and was able to self-manage his emotions better.
So was that nature or nurture?
Yes.
Or both, yes.
Uh-huh, yes.
Yes.
So
he inherited a certain wiring or predisposition from his father, and also had it modeled, certain behavior modeled, and he became aware that he was just replicating his familial history. Was that what was happening, essentially?
Yes, and also there's something which is we hear about now called neuroplasticity.
Yeah, tell me more about that.
Yeah, they used to think it was just kids who could change their brains.
Right.
But now they find that people can do it at pretty much any age.
Mm, that's a relief, huh?
Now that we're 108. But really, we can literally grow new pathways. We can enhance our cognitive abilities. We can cultivate positive emotions. There's been tons of studies about EEG and consciousness. But just to say that yes, we can change. And once we do make those changes through certain kinds of training, not just neurofeedback, but other kinds of training too, we become more confident in our abilities. We can really start to be aware of our inner resources. We can feel a lot more secure. We can really find that base. We can really find a true home, if you will. Not just, I've got lots of money, so I'm secure. Or, I've got everything in place until it's not in place.
Mm-hmm.
So what is true security, which is what we're discussing in effect? It really does depend on all these things that we're talking about.
See, in a curious way, at first, like when you're learning something and you have this tool, like the neurofeedback, which you described as training wheel, so it's useful, and then you outgrow it. You don't need it anymore. You've internalized that particular state, which is, you don't want to encourage dependence as a practitioner. So you want to give people tools that they can grow into, but that also help them to self-regulate, and it doesn't need the outer regulation or the promptings of a machine distributing particular brain waves that are known to be calming or expansive or whatever. It's very easy to get, you can get dependent on medication, or I would hope you wouldn't become dependent on technology either.
Well, the whole point is that unlike the medication route, once the brain has assimilated that training, or once the energy field is more in balance, then in many cases the changes are permanent. You don't have to be reliant on that someone giving you that service. You really take it with you. And that is the whole point. We want to take ourselves with us wherever we go. We want to find that safe harbor in ourselves. And as I said during this time together, that some of it has to do with our physiology being well regulated and in a way simplified. Because a lot of times we really do kind of self-sabotage because there's just too much going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, you close down because you're on overload. You get stupid and dull and fear or overload or stress will do that sometimes. I'm ordinarily fluent in speaking, but I was doing some public speaking recently and I blanked out for a moment, like in terms of what I wanted to express. And so rarely happens, but I knew it was because of the fear, and I was able to take a breath and recover my train of thought, but I lost it in mid-sentence practically. Now, where was I? It's kind of embarrassing, but you just be naturally human and people were on your side, and I was able to pick up the thread, but it was a real illustration of just how I became impaired because I was a little bit tense, new group that I was speaking to, and hadn't done it in a while, so, finding my chops.
But that brings up a very important aspect of true security. When we cultivate a certain self-acceptance, like we're not perfectionist anymore, we forgive ourselves for making errors or our limitations, then we can pause and regroup.
Right.
You were able to regroup.
Yeah.
You didn't die on the stage.
Right.
So the point is to have
without
that
a microphone.
To have that flexibility, yeah. And to be... The strength is really in saying, I'm not perfect. And people accept you when you're honest about that. It's authentic.
Yeah.
I've been in situations, of course, where I've been less than my best. And yet, by really acknowledging that imperfection, something else ironically comes in to help, as I've discovered. So instead of saying, I've got to be my best at all times, which is really a fiction.
Yeah, and a great burden.
Yes. A lot of people sadly, have that. And there are ways of working with that, by the way.
Like, for example?
Well, again, the idea is to be more flexible and less brittle. So when a system is stuck, it means that it's got nowhere to go. If it's not right, then it's like, oh my God, I'm falling apart, I'm a failure. And so there's no base, there's no gentle support to forgive these imperfections. So the point is, this base should be a gentle base, I feel. This grounding that we all really need, this grounding is gentle. It accepts that we're less than Superman, and we learn from experience, we learn from mistakes. It's all information. It's all information.
See, at first being less than Superman is disappointing, but actually it's a relief.
Exactly. I mean, the American male, for example, you know, has to succeed in that conventional sense of success. And then you hear about midlife crises and divorce rates and all the rest of it. And going on pills, antidepressants, which, you know.
Buying that red sports car.
Yeah, I mean, you got to keep up with the Joneses, right? Otherwise, and this is another show, Rory. What is true wealth? Yeah. It's not what's on the outside. It's what's on the inside.
Right.
No amount of cars can actually make you happy.
But that's your attempt, is to get the feeling of that, what that new car brings you, if only for a few brief shining
moments.
It's called
adrenaline.
Endorphin release.
And by the way, that's another point that I want to bring up, that when I'm doing neurofeedback, for example, it's not just regulating the brain, the nervous system, it's also the whole body chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
We've all heard of cortisol, which, you know, we give off in stressful situations, which is so depleting.
But it's meant to help rise to the occasion, too, isn't it?
For short periods of time.
Yeah. What does it do for those that are not acquainted?
Well, it activates that fight or flight sympathetic nervous system. So, you know, your heart rate, your respiratory rate, your muscle tension, everything rises to the occasion to meet the threat or demand.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're chronically like that, we're going to wear ourselves out.
Oh, yeah. No time fast.
Make ourselves sick. So, you know, people, for example, who self-medicate, and including people who are addictive, they self-medicate because they're actually very agitated and distressed, and they have to calm themselves down.
Sure.
Because there was a study by a man called Eugene Peniston in the 80s, mm-hmm. who did neurofeedback with alcoholics. He found there was a depletion of dopamine.
Mm-hmm.
So the neurofeedback, it kind of upped the dopamine in a certain way,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of people got weaned off the alcohol.
Were they using alcohol to try to kind of bring up the dopamine? Or
they
were succeeding short term, but not long term.
Unconsciously self-medicate like that. Sure, I mean, we all seek calm and, you know,
homeostasis, balance of some sort, even if the means are not skillful, as they say in Buddhism.
Exactly. So why not learn to do it naturally?
Mm-hmm.
It's really about managing one's state.
Hmm.
So again, you can measure that with the EEG. You can measure different states of consciousness. So wouldn't it be nice to learn to get into a quiet, alert, yet meditative state through practice? And by the way, a strategy for everybody in their life I recommend is you start the day collecting yourself, sitting quietly before you go out into the day. You need that rhythm. You can also learn, you know, strategies, coping strategies to, you know, feel that it's not all uphill, that there's some base of support. We can all learn these strategies, not just what I do, but, you know, everyone. There's a lot of life coaches that teach these coping strategies.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the inner resources that is just as important as the outer resources. That's what made people resilient. And by the way, not to mention, it's not just about succeeding and being effective, is it? It's really opening to experience, opening to nuggets of joy, of wonder.
Sounds like happiness to me.
Well, that's it. I mean, sometimes we are blessed with these. You know, there's a crack in the door, and there's the sunlight, and we can smell the flowers. We forget about that sometimes. To have these vivid impressions is real food.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a necessity, I believe. It's not just a luxury. It's actually a food that we need.
Food for the soul.
Exactly.
Which affects the physiology, interestingly enough.
Exactly.
You know,
they're all...
Everything is interconnected.
Right. So, you know, there's the so-called field. And when we feel we're more connected with the world, beyond our skin, for example, we feel we're not alone. We feel we're part of something that could be a collaboration. It could actually support us, and in turn we can reciprocate.
Mm-hmm.
What we bring into our lives every morning from a more collective state makes a difference, they say. We're not always aware of our individual effect, but apparently everything matters.
Well, this gets back to resonance, actually, which I wanted to explore a little bit more. In some way, we're always affecting each other just by the, in a sense, the vibration that we hold. I always think of the example of a piano. If there are two pianos in the room and you strike middle C, the other piano is going to, that string that's tuned to that frequency will start to sound. And although you didn't touch it directly, there the resonance impacts like things that are likely attuned or tuned in the same way. And we're affecting each other that way. And also the neurofeedback equipment is, in a sense, tuning into your brain waves and then feeding them back, if I understand correctly, and perhaps feeding them back in a way that's more whole or not distorted, which feeds new information into your same old setup, if I'm grasping that.
Yes, that's absolutely right. And I was just thinking of a study that was, I read in Lynn McTaggart's book on the intention experiment,
mm-hmm.
where they hooked up people, loving couples with EEG, and it turned out that, yes, resonance was definitely in play with people who really tune into one another. It's very easy to see how their biorhythms can easily match.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they're not at the beginning, they come into a resonance.
Mm-hmm.
And the other point I want to make, which is related to the healing work I do, there's a certain frequency, which is the Earth's frequency.
7.8 hertz per second or something?
Right,
like that.
It's called the alpha theta.
Schumann.
Exactly, the Schumann principle.
Yeah.
And when we're training a quiet state, that is the sort of the the frequency that we're training quite often. And when you feel more in sync with the Earth, you're automatically going to feel more grounded, more secure. It stands to reason. There's this magnetism in play. And with reconnective healing, you can get that same effect, that you feel a harmonization of yourself on the planet and yourself with other people. Again, you
mm-hmm.
feel that connection.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all related. And once the more and more we can feel that holistic view of things, which is really what health is about, I think.
And it's interesting, it's not just a intellectually knowing, you use the word feel. Maybe you could say a little bit more of that.
Yes. That. So, for example, in reconnective healing, I feel the energy coming out of my palms.
Mm-hmm.
This is very, very common with healers. And you can actually measure this energy. There's a lot of new science out there that's measured all these things. And the energy from the palms is very much connected electrically with the energy of the heart. And the heart is the biggest energy source in the body. So that's not a bad place to come from. And which in turn is connected with the solar plexus, with the brain, with all the energy centers of the body. So when there is this heart resonance, well, obviously it makes us feel good. It makes us feel connected with other people, with ourselves, and maybe even the bigger picture. So again, this idea of health, I think, definitely has to do with balance, resonance, all these vibration, the vibrational field.
New harmonious patterns,
yeah,
in a way.
And
I mean, if you look at it, healing happens, change happens when new patterns enter the scene, you know, and that's partly what I think you're facilitating.
Can you say more about that?
Well, just... For example, your new wave patterns are being introduced by your neurofeedback machine, which then have a physiological impact on the person, and well-being also arises from that shift in the vibrational state. And in a way, the energetic healing works at different frequencies, but it's doing the same thing, which is
yes,
to introduce
it is.
New patterns that... Otherwise, you're just stuck in your same old pattern.
But I wanted to just say that
yes.
You'd say the machine is doing the wave. The machine is not doing the waves per se. It's actually just displaying in a magnified form the patient's biorhythms.
Right.
It's showing how dysregulated or regulated those waves are, and that's the feedback. And me as a clinician, I'm first of all using clinical judgment to select a protocol that's appropriate
mm-hmm.
for the patient in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
But secondly, to notice these subtle moment-to-moment changes as they, let's say, become more relaxed, more relieved.
And what might you be introducing as you witness this? When you say protocols, what kind of protocols? I come in because I'm chronically anxious for no particular reason. Then what?
Well, there's many reasons for someone feeling anxious, but let's just leave it simply that someone is anxious and they want to find peace,
mm-hmm.
calm. So what I'll have them sit in the chair and I'll say, you don't have to do a thing. In
what?
Fact, the less...
what?
Nothing to learn, nothing to strive for.
No place to go, no place to...
Nothing to do.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Which is not easy.
Yeah.
We're trained to do all the time. So most people get sort of the idea when I say, well, it's like you're idling at the traffic light. You're not going anywhere. You're just waiting. Or you might have a nice visualization of a beautiful forest or a beach, which is a calming kind of image.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be, think of a person you really have a loving feeling for. This I use particularly with heart math.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm doing that, you know, biofeedback. But whatever feedback it is, the idea of quietening the agitation gradually, gently, and with the aid of the software, which kind of provides those conducive conditions, as I said, the offset of the patient's brain rhythms. It kind of encourages the brain to free itself from its habits
mm-hmm.
and to let it go. Let it find its true
and does
rhythm.
The brain becomes self-aware in a way, or aware of...
Well, the brain is an organ of perception, yes.
Yeah, so it becomes aware of its rhythms or vibrations or...
Well, you can feel it. I mean, I'll say to a patient, you know, after a few sites of brain mapping, I'll say, how do you feel?
Mm-hmm.
And they might say, well, I feel this nice kind of buzz sensation, relaxation. I had a patient once who came in with a migraine. She was not happy.
Oh, yeah. It's really hard.
And so, you know, took a case history, etc. And we went around the brain with different sites on the head, which is what the brain mapping is. And at one point, I heard a... I go, "You okay?" "Yes, I'm fine. I'm just recalling I'm 5 years old, and I'm on the beach with my uncle, and we're building sandcastles, and it's fun. And I'm smelling the salt, and it's great." And so, you know, it can be experiential, and those little moments of wonder are all part of the nutrition. Or it could just be, "I don't feel anything in particular." That's okay too. You might find after a good night's sleep, something else comes through the next day. It's all a process, and different. Everyone manifests differently.
A process essentially of awareness, I mean, which leads to self-regulation, if I'm hearing you correctly.
Well, I believe that has to do with the training of adaptability. So as we become more regulated, there's room to be more flexible. There's room for the psyche to say, "I'm not so fearful. I can really let it happen and adjust as I go. I can meet the challenge. I can meet the changing situation like a warrior." A warrior. Here's my definition of a warrior. A warrior acts in spite of fear. And I had a wonderful experience once in a warrior camp, so I know what that means. So a true warrior is not just a samurai swordsman. It's really someone who, they may still be afraid, but they'll go do it anyway, because they're coming from a more secure base, a reorientation towards something that they can trust. And again, first comes the regulation, then comes the feeling of confidence, esteem, of assessment of one's core values, of really self-discovery, and feeling I can trust myself. So I'll fall a few times, I'll get back up. But more importantly, to get out of my way and just know what the right move is. This can be when you're negotiating a business deal, or it could be negotiating a very precious relationship. It doesn't matter. It's all about coming from a great place in yourself. Because when you're in that better place, good things happen. So my mission is really to transport or help the transportation from relieving distress to really finding a true purpose, a new direction, new goals that come from something more authentic. And often good things happen in terms of self-discovery. Like, you know, "Well, I knew I didn't really want to be an accountant, but, you know, many people live lives of quiet desperation." But now I really discovered that I'm doing X instead of Y. And I'm really, it's more authentic for me. And yeah, it's a little scary, but I'm learning the steps.
And in a sense, you bring your whole life into your work. You know, this is America, so we've all had many careers or many experiences, both personal and professional, that ultimately impact the way that we are with our patients or clients. Has that been like that for you?
Well, I just wanted to make the point, actually, that in this day and age, we have to re-career.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, we literally, to survive in the marketplace, we really have to have an inventory of skills. And it's not just about, you know, going back to school. It's really about developing external resources and internal resources.
I've often felt like it was braiding several different strands into a serviceable rope, and that's kind of all what we're all involved in as we take our talents and skills and abilities and experiences and braid them into something that, that can be useful for ourselves and the people that we work with. I see that that's what you've been doing in your own way.
Yes, and of course, guess what? It gives me great satisfaction too. It feeds me personally. My practice feeds me. I've met some great people. When I see changes, good changes, it's I know that something's working, and that's the reason I embarked on that journey for myself in the first place.
Yeah, I think that's probably true of most people. Most people who find themselves in the healing community, you know, that there's always that initial spark is to you know, find healing for yourself, and then you, as you go through that process, you're actually in a more compassionate state to work with other people who come to you with their distress, mm-hmm. you know, disarray or whatever. You know, and when you've dealt with your own, not that you're not always dealing with it, but it's that practice of how you deal with it that then you be your authentic, as you were saying before.
Yeah. And just to bring up the point again of as we become less overwhelmed with fear, there's less grasping for what we want. There's more sort of creating a space for things to happen. Mm-hmm. It seems that when we're in the flow, when we let things happen from a more secure place in ourselves, things just come. Yeah. We meet people, we have these experiences, things seem to go well. And we maybe didn't even do anything. Yeah. That's where providence steps in.
Well, as you keep saying, good things happen. So if people want to reach you, what would be the best way to reach you, Anton?
Well, my email is anton.blumen, B-L-U-M-A-N, @gmail.com. Please visit my website, mindcarecenter.net. Also, 914-393-5616. And again, I encourage people to check out these therapies in more detail on my website, mindcarecenter.net.
Well, all right. We get to know you a little bit more, not just as a host who has lots to say, but somebody who's right in the thick of it and you know, helping people every day. So I'm happy that you're sharing your gifts with the world.
It's been my pleasure.
Okay. Well, thank you all for listening to New Perspectives. Good night now.
Bye-bye.
It's not just radio, it's Rockland World Radio. RocklandWorldRadio.com.